This is Follow Spot, San Diego Theater Scene's bi-weekly podcast focused on the people who make theater in San Diego County, with news, views, and conversation to inform you of what's happening in San Diego's exciting theater community.
Hi, this is Kelly Lepchinski for San Diego Theater Scene Follow Spot Podcast, recording today from Onstage Playhouse in Chula Vista, where they are preparing to open Neil LaBute's Fat Pig in cooperation with Intermission Productions. I am here with director Kim Pappas, Intermission Artistic Director Carla Nell, who is also in the show, and actors Jenna Dawsey, Brendan Cavalier, and Ryan Ross, as well as Assistant Director Christopher Berger. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I've been familiar with Intermission for a while, and I know that Intermission has been here at Onstage Playhouse a couple of times before, but always as a visiting production. Now, this time, you're here in cooperation with Onstage, co-producing Fat Pig. To my knowledge, this is the first time that Onstage has produced with another company. How did that collaboration come about?
Kim and I found the script for Fat Pig about a year ago. Kim brought the script to me, and I, in turn, brought the script to Terry, who is the artistic director here at Onstage.
Terry Brown.
And we basically decided that we were going to collaborate on it. We had been trying to get the royalties to do the show unsuccessfully, and Terry suggested that just because they're established in the community and have a little bit more following, and that they might be able to get the rights. And they did. So they asked us to come on as a co-producer of the show.
So it's also my understanding that Fat Pig would then be the first show of a first season for Intermission. Is that true? A first full season?
That was our hope. We are still planning our first season, but Fat Pig will be outside of that.
Okay, there was some talk last time I talked to you about you having a home for Intermission. Did that...
We had a home. The people that offered us the space are also going to be losing their space. So, we're still looking, and we still have our season lined up. We just have to find a space now.
Okay, well, you're back to the Fringe Theater Gypsy Company.
Back to the Fringe Theater Drawing Board, yes.
Well, now, I'm sitting right now next to Jenna Dawsey, who I have worked with and I'm very familiar with. She's done a number of shows here at Onstage Playhouse. But the two men in your cast are both newcomers, at least to Onstage. Now, did they come on with Intermission? Tell us a little bit about these gentlemen.
Brendan Cavalier and Ryan Ross are actually, they are part of Triad Productions, which is another production company here in town.
Another homeless one. We're going to be seeing a Triad at Compass Theater.
Absolutely. And basically, they came and auditioned for the show. They were very interested, obviously, in the show, and they let us know it very early on. And they came in and auditioned and just happened to be perfect for what Kim was looking for.
And Kim is the director who read the script and brought it to you. Kim, why this script? Why this play?
Well, I heard about the script when it was off-Broadway, and I was interested in it, mainly because there was a woman in the lead who was like me. You know, mm-hmm. It's not often that you see someone cast as a love interest that's above a size 6, you know? So that sparked my interest, and then when I read the script, it was just so human, and I found things in all of the characters that I understood. I didn't necessarily agree with it, but I understood it, and I just loved it, and so I brought it to Carla, and I was like, you have to read this. Took her a few weeks to finally sit down and do it, and then she came to me and was like, okay, let's do it.
And so she was pre-cast from the beginning.
Yes.
She was. Now, Carla just told us how wonderful these men were in auditions. Tell us about finding Jenna.
Jenna and I met actually after the first round of auditions. I read her at Claire de Lune Coffee Shop. That's where I read Ryan, too. That's our office, per se. And she just had a depth with the character that I didn't see from everyone. It's really easy to read the role and just play it straight, cold, you mm-hmm. know.
That character is a very caustic, barb-throwing
yeah.
character.
It's really easy to not like her, but it's my goal that everyone be able to understand where she's coming from, and Jenna really gives her that humanity that she needs.
What is your character's name, Tom?
Yeah, my character name is Tom, and Tom and Helen are in a serious relationship in the play. Carl and I went through several weekends of extra like character work and trying to get comfortable with one another. It's both, I think, our first sort of love scene on stage. That was sort of a hurdle to get over, but...
No, I don't think we've given much of a synopsis other than to say that one of the characters, the lead, is a woman over a size 6. That would be the Helen character.
Way over a size 6.
And so Tom then starts a relationship, and the problem is what? The social problems of dating larger women and the way the friends react to her?
Yeah, that's pretty much the nail on the head right there. Tom is very uncomfortable with the way his friends, played by Ryan and Jonah, sort of judge him, and based on his decision to date Helen.
I really feel like Jeannie and Carter are a representation of society more than just Tom's friends.
The way that most people speak about larger people as they are in society.
The way that we judge people immediately based on the way that they look. We make immediate assumptions. I think it also really, I don't want to give away too much of the ending, but I feel like it brings up a lot of questions about what we let go of on a daily basis in order to fit into what society expects of us. Whether it be not doing what we love so that we can make the money that we need to buy the things that everyone says we should have, mm-hmm. or, you know, walking away from who we love, or really just not being true to ourselves so that we can fit into everyone else's standard of what we're supposed to be.
Right.
It's definitely been an interesting experience. As the charming, charismatic person I'm in real life, being somewhat of an insufferable jerk at all times, I'm hoping not to get fired from my day job. Just to clarify for everyone that I'm actually really nice.
He is.
Yes, I too would like to add, while we're on this subject, that I have nightmares about being perceived as Jeannie, just because I do think she was said to be acid-tongued by someone. I actually had to prepare my parents for the number of F-bombs that I drop. Just so that they don't interrupt the play, which they've been known to do in the past. I'm going to try really hard not to break character and convince the audience that I'm actually a nice person. So
one of the advantages of our San Diego audiences is at least they do recognize that you're acting and not up there as yourself. Well, guys, thank you so much for your time today. I just want to say Onstage Playhouse and Intermission Productions present Fat Pig September 5th through October 4th at Onstage Playhouse in Chula Vista. For more information or for tickets, call 619-422-RSVP or log on to onstageplayhouse.org. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Kelly.
Hi, this is Kelly Lepchinski again, recording today from North Park Vaudeville and Candy Shop. I'm here with the owner, Jeff Bushnell, and his wife, the theater's artistic director, Summer Golden. Hello, guys.
Hey, Kelly.
Now, in just about every way, the story of this little theater is unique. We have an airline pilot who meets an aspiring playwright. You fall in love, get married, build a theater, maybe or maybe not in that order. Not only that, it's a small for-profit theater open to the rawest of new talent, buttressed by the daytime retail business of a candy shop. Guys, how did you come to such a unique business plan?
Actually, that was Summer's idea.
I've always thought that a theater without anything else, Monday through Thursday, they're not making any money. So why not have a retail business to bring things in all the time?
Okay, why candy?
Because it's the cheapest license.
Good answer. Well, now, you did want to build your theater close to home in North Park. You already lived here in the area, and you didn't want to make a lot of changes, I understand, to the storefront so that you would carve out a theater. What you did get in this space was a sales counter that doubles as a tech booth by way of a little window between the store and the 35-seat theater. You've got high ceilings for all of your equipment, a backstage area, a patio outside in the back. It seems like you found just about everything in this little space except room for large audiences. How does that work for you?
Actually, it works very well. The kind of things we do here generally do not generate large audiences. We built the space specifically to be a place for new and untested work so that we didn't know what we would get, but we wanted to be able to run it at a relatively low cost so that we could continue doing new and untested work, which has been the vast bulk of what we do here.
Now, we talked a little bit before we turned the mic on here, and you were doing a little cost analysis for me that actually that works out pretty well for the square footage you have. But keeping your doors open does depend on your ticket sales or your candy sales, because as you mentioned earlier, you are a for-profit theater, so you can't apply for grants. At the same time, not having to answer to a board of directors or account for grant money must give you a lot of freedom. How do you walk that financial line?
A lot of it comes out of pocket, to be real honest with you. This is a labor of love and belief in theater and the potential of new people. It's what we believe in, not only new playwrights, but new actors, new directors, new types of people. As you know, we teach mentally handicapped actors here. We use a lot of things that aren't done in normal theater.
Right.
And that's why we don't want to have a board of directors. We care to do it the way we want to do it. And we're fortunate enough to be able to afford to do that kind of on our own terms.
Now, does that change? I know that you're either retiring soon or have just retired.
And I planned it so that things would still be able to hum right along. And this becomes a significantly greater part of my work day, as it were.
Well, now, you know, you'd mentioned something, and it used to be that actors could get their first experiences, a chance to learn and to grow in the community theaters of an area, but now, especially here in San Diego, the community theaters are even throwing around the word professional, and they're using the same actors time and time again, so opportunities for new and untested talent to emerge and to grow, they're fewer and farther between. In fact, I'd venture to say that your theater is one of the few places that's actually left for Tyro talent, and that is, as you mentioned, part of your mission.
It's actually in our business plan as one of the prime missions for the theater. And it was kind of, again, Summer's idea, but specifically her end up was from the playwright mm-hmm. aspect. Mm-hmm. That's why we developed the festival that we'll talk about in a little bit. And we just decided we would take chances on new people. It's proved very satisfying to us. We really enjoy working with them.
Well, that leads us into one of the other things you mentioned, because that willingness to cast outside of the norm and deal with untested people led to what you call your STARS program, which is a theatrical troupe for actors with mental challenges. And that program has been blossoming here, and many of the actors in that STARS program, I read recently in Drama Biz, that has helped them immensely to build confidence and go on in their own lives. That must be a program that makes you very proud.
Again, Summer's idea, Summer's dream, and you go ahead and tell them about it, dear.
You know, it just works because I believe in them, and they all have great talent. They just have a different way of going about it. We do have a movie that they're going to make, their third movie, the end of this month, and we were hired by the Seeds organization to make that film. And it just works. I just love it. I just think that everyone who wants to act should have the opportunity and not be turned down because they're not mainstream actors.
It was her idea to get it going. We did that about 3 years ago, which was about 3 years after we opened the theater. And it took us a little while to get going with the local mentally challenged organizations. And finally, somebody heard about us and had the Down Syndrome Society organization had some people that were interested in doing it. And once they came here, they started spreading the word to their friends, and now we have a waiting list. And
wow.
We've opened a second class. Again, these classes are free. We don't charge for them. And it was totally new to me. I had no knowledge of this population whatsoever. And it's been extremely satisfying to see them grow and really to see changes in individuals' lives as they gained confidence. You know, they just changed. They really, really did. And
how far away do they come from? Are they all...
There are a number that come down from North County in the Encinitas area. And we have one student comes over from La Mesa. They're pretty much all around. There's not a lot available outside of specific stuff that's organized through the local mentally handicapped associations for them. So this has turned out to be a real blessing. And the biggest thing that we've tried to do, and we've actually done it successfully on a number of occasions, is integrate a number of the actors from that program into our regular main shows, and that's worked very well.
I was involved with the Playwrights Festival last year, and I met one of them, I believe, Luigi.
Luigi
was acting as an usher for the program last year, and there was one show in particular, I don't remember the name of it, but there were a number of your STARS actors in one of the shows last year.
The Boys Next Door we did, which is a show, a well-known show, and it turned into a movie about a group home for mentally handicapped guys, and we elected to do that show with a cast, mixed cast, some mentally handicapped and some non-mentally handicapped actors, and it was one of the actual fiscal success for us. And most importantly, at least for me, to watch the cast interact and learn from each other was a true emotional high. They just, the non-handicapped actors, kind of none of them had worked with these kind of folks, and they were a little suspicious at first. They gained tremendous respect for them. The handicapped actors looked up to these others. We had one actor in particular. It was a professional, and I mean, he became the sort of like the father figure for them all, and they're all still in touch with each other.
Well, you're talking about Luigi. He actually graduated from STARS. He told us a couple weeks ago that he feels that he can do more, and so I was really pleased about that. So he'll be in our show on the 14th. And after that, he's going to be the director in charge of music for the beginner STARS group, who are more challenged than the other group. And he's going to be in the performance art show. He's going to be in the Playwrights Festival. He's going to be an alternate for our improv troupe, and he's also in the film. Luigi felt that he had advanced beyond that, and I think he did.
Now I'd like to talk a little bit about the Playwrights Festival. This is the sixth year of the festival, and like all of your productions, it does foster new talent, but that's not all, because not only can an inexperienced actor or an inexperienced director get his feet wet, but experienced actors can try to direct for the first time, or experienced directors can take a turn at acting. Playwrights from anywhere in the world might see their work produced for the first time on this stage, and some of those playwrights even go on to have the works which were first produced here published. Now, what you're offering for this festival is a place to play, to learn, and to grow. So from all angles, that's a pretty inviting prospect.
Most festivals would be real contests where some highfalutin artistic committee reads the plays and decides what they want to do. We take the submissions, then we solicit for directors. This year we have 20 directors. As you say, some are new, some are very experienced. And what we ask is that directors look through the plays and pick six plays that they would be willing to direct. And then at the end, when everybody's had their chance to look them over, we tally up all the votes, as it were. In general, the plays that get the most votes get produced by a director who wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal opinion is this mirrors the real world as to how real work gets done out there. It's not always chosen by how wonderful it is or how well it's written or anything else. Somebody has an idea. They like the subject. They like the way that it could be put on stage. They think it'll make them money, whatever. And I think this mirrors the real world.
Well, it does, too. As a director, you know, when you're looking for a piece, there are things you say, well, I don't want to work with too many food props, or I don't want to pick people who I don't think I can cast. If it needs a young child, if it needs an older person, and I don't know where the resources are for that, I might not want to direct that piece. Someone else might. But it does mean that when you've got the show, one of the six shows you've picked, you're fairly confident that you can come up with the props you need for it or the cast you need for it. So that makes it much easier on the producer. And it's something that playwrights, you know, a lot of the best ones, we talked to a guy, David Wiener, not long ago. Great playwright,
yep,
a lot
David
of fun,
had
good
one
guy.
We did here. Great.
And he very much knows to write for the audience of where he's submitting his piece, because there are some things for example, in this space, it's a 35-seat theater. It's maybe 15 by 17?
The stage, 17 feet wide and 7 feet deep.
It's 17 by 7. So you wouldn't want to put on, say, The Sound of Music on this stage.
Not possible.
So if that's in the submissions, it probably doesn't get picked by the directors.
Right. We do tell them roughly when we call for submissions, we'd like it to be done on a bare stage kind of environment, 4 to 6 people max. Some people listen, some don't.
But that may be why their piece doesn't get selected. It could be a brilliant piece of writing and just doesn't fit the space or the directors for the year.
That's true.
And Kelly, you're one of our top directors again this year.
Thank you. Yes, I get to direct Michael Thomas Tower's piece, Knowing When, this year. As a 20-year actor, I haven't put my foot down much in directing, so I'm getting my foot wet here as well. Now, this is a little away from the Playwrights Festival. One of the things I've noticed here is that this area around you is really growing for the small theater community. I mean, right here, as we've mentioned, you've got the opportunity for newer challenged artists, but you go down a block to Park Boulevard, go left, you have Swedenborg Hall, which is coming into its own as a venue for gypsy companies. If you go right, you get into Twig's Coffee House, which has been the host to many of the staged readings and small theatrical events in town. A little further down, you get to the professional theater, Diversionary Theater. This part of town really seems to be kind of a high-energy melting pot for that creative spirit that's right here. Are you finding that, are these little places coming together? Is there really a community sense to this North Park University Heights, or is that still to come?
I would say that's probably still to come. North Park itself, the business improvement district, which is called North Park Main Street, it's billing itself and has been and was when we started trying to become an arts, entertainment, and cultural center. That's the avowed goal of North Park. You have Ray at Night over there, which is one Saturday night a month, which is a major artistic for physical art, paintings and sculpture and so forth, and has become a draw to where they'll draw over 1,000 people on a Saturday night to the art gallery.
galleries there. There are about seven or eight art galleries in North Park. We were the first little theater. In addition to those you mentioned, the Birch North Park Theater has been rebuilt and is a major venue now, 800-seat venue, I believe. Acoustic Music has a little room where they do shows periodically. And just this year, they started North by North Park, which is an acoustic music festival, kind of small beginnings of the same as the one down in Austin, Texas.
South by Southwest.
South by Southwest, yeah. And so there's a takeoff on that. So North Park itself is trying to do that. Some of the venues you mentioned aren't technically in North Park. We are very aware of the Swedenborgian. We started our vaudeville shows in the Swedenborgian Theater.
I didn't know that.
Yes, we did three shows there before we built this. We have performed there, and the gal Jackie Lowell that runs the improv group that we took classes in and met, she performs there improv.
Well, Jeff Bushnell and Summer Golden are the owners of North Park Vaudeville and Candy Shop, which will present its sixth annual Playwrights Festival on four weekends in October. That's October 3rd through 25th. What is the ticket price on that, Jeff?
$14.
And if you'd like to reserve a ticket or get more information, you can call the Candy Shop at 619-220-8663.
That's correct, and we can take your reservation over the phone with your credit card.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thanks for having us, Kelly. Right. And thanks for this wonderful show that you do.
Thank you.
It's a great thing for the theater community here.
Much appreciated, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
My definition of perfect sex is to make mad, passionate love to a man until 4 a.m, and then have the man turn into a pizza.
Yeah!
On August 15th, I received an email which said simply, Priscilla Allen has passed away. It would be the first of many emails I would receive about the Grand Dame of San Diego Theater, but being relatively new to San Diego myself, I had never had the opportunity to meet Priscilla or to see her on stage. I'd seen pictures of her, as the corpulent gentleman, as a phonograph, but I'd never seen her, on stage, doing her thing. Shortly after her death, though, members of the San Diego theater community began their own campaign to remember her. Memorials were written on the blogs of nearly every theater where she'd worked, if the theater had a blog, and she'd worked at them all. Former students from numerous city schools wrote tributes on their pages, and some even posted videos of her to YouTube. And that's how I first saw Priscilla Allen, online in a video tribute. A posting of a cabaret she'd performed with Ole Kittleson at Schroeder's Club. She appeared there as an aging fairy, as a starstruck nun, and, hilariously, as a less-than-typical little orphan Annie, complete with a Daddy Warbucks-worthy cigar.
Everybody!
I get the feeling I would have loved this woman. And many people did. I've had the pleasure of speaking through email and phone calls to many of Priscilla's friends in the last few weeks. None of them were able to join me in the studio so soon after their friend's passing, but all were full of love and warmth and respect for the woman they'd lost. Ron Shillarton assured me that even though he couldn't be here, he knew Priscilla would still be swearing at him from wherever she is. In fact, that seems to be a defining characteristic of Priscilla. Even in memorial, she's often referred to as saucy or a prankster, and one blogger happily tells of the Christmas cards Priscilla would send each year, decorated with pictures from her early performing years, in which she'd be scantily clad and where she would write something suggestive and sassy on the inside. But her versatility and talent are equally remembered. Her longtime friend, fellow actor, and acting coach, DJ Sullivan, was with Priscilla when she passed. DJ remembered dragging Priscilla to Michael Shurtleff's audition class in L.A., and once there, the famous casting guru himself exclaimed that Priscilla's talent was unbelievable. DJ echoed the sentiment, saying that when Priscilla came on stage, you couldn't take your eyes off of her. When she entered a stage, she owned it. Priscilla Allen died on August 14th at her home in La Jolla after a 12-year battle with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. She was 70 years old. Gone, but not forgotten.
Never met a man I didn't like. Highfalutin gent or Bowery bum. Yes, I've come a long way down the pike. Never met a man I didn't like.
This has been Follow Spot, a podcast service of San Diego Theater Scene Incorporated, a nonprofit organization for the arts in San Diego, California. We invite you to visit our website, sdtheaterscene.com, for current comprehensive news and information about performance activities in San Diego County. Your host for this program has been Kelly Lapchinsky, who is also program coordinator, and Michael Thomas Tower, who is also engineer and announcer. Thank you for listening. And we look forward to your being with us again soon.